The story of Frank A. Vanderlip. In the year 1880, a young farmer boy entered a machine shop in Aurora, Illinois, to work as an apprentice. His faded blue trousers tucked inside heavy boots, Frank Vanderlip stood at his lathe 10 hours a day, beads of sweat glistening on his high forehead. Sometimes his eyes would wander to a streak of sunlight that had fastened onto the door sill. Outside, away from the humming belts and clashing machinery, lay opportunity, and a world that Frank Vanderlip had determined to see.
Where are you going?
Hello there, Wynn. Sort of thought you'd be waiting for me here.
Let's walk down by the river.
I sure, but I can't stay long. Tomorrow I'll have dinner ready.
So long, Vanderlip.
Oh, night, Mr. Higgins. That was Mr. Higgins. He's shop foreman.
He dresses like a dude.
Oh, that's because he's from the city. He always makes fun of my clothes. Says I look like a hayseed. Oh, but I can't help it. These are the only clothes I have.
Yeah, don't worry, Frank. Maybe someday you'll be shop foreman.
Oh, no. Ever since I met Mr. Higgins, I've been thinking of that. If I was shop foreman, I might get to be like him. I want to do something better.
I can't say I blame you. Oh, what's that book under your arm?
Oh, it's just a book. I read it during lunch hour.
Who wrote it?
Shakespeare.
That's it. Romeo and Juliet. That's a fine thing to read in the machine shop. You won't get any place that way. Why don't you read something useful?
Everybody who amounts to anything has read Shakespeare. I'm just getting ready for the time when I am onto something.
Say, listen, Frank. Why don't you go to college?
Oh, I am. I'm going to Cornell.
When?
Well, as soon as I earn enough money.
Well, I intend to go to the University of Illinois. Why don't you come along with me? It's much cheaper than Cornell, not so far away. Hey, we could start next term.
But I haven't the money.
Oh, you've enough for 1 year. Worry about the rest when the time comes. Say, if you don't leave that machine shop now, you'll be here all your life.
Wynn, I believe you're right. We'll both start in together next term, huh?
Mr. Vanderlip, before I can admit you to the university, I must give you a short entrance examination.
Yes, sir.
I find out something about your knowledge of English. What books have you read?
Well, sir, I've read Shakespeare.
And my boy, tell me about one of his plays.
How about Romeo and Juliet?
Oh, excellent.
Well, in the first place, there were two families, the Montagues and the Capulets. Romeo was a Montague, and Juliet was on the other side. One night, the Capulets gave a party. Romeo wasn't invited, but he went anyway. While he was there, he happened to see Juliet. She was with a fellow called Pavin. And then she finds Romeo's dagger, and she stabs herself. And, well, that's about all. When the family came in, they were both dead.
A very interesting family. I can see that you're quite an intelligent chap and that you read very thoroughly.
Is there anything else, sir?
No, that will be all. The entrance examination is over. Mr. Vanderlip, you are hereby admitted to the university.
Vanderlip's account of Romeo and Juliet entitled him to enter the University of Illinois, but after a year, lack of funds forced him to leave college and return to work. In Chicago, he obtained employment in a broker's office where he studied the technique of high finance. 3 years later, he became a Cub reporter on the Chicago Tribune. Exciting times were now in store for young Frank Vanderlip. He was sent to interview murderers, visiting statesmen, and Indian rajahs. As printer's ink fused with his blood, Vanderlip mounted higher, attaining the post of financial editor. One day, he walked into the office of Lyman J. Gage, president of the First National Bank.
I have $3,000, Mr. Gage. The money was left from my father's estate, and I've decided to invest it.
A good idea. What firm did you have in mind?
Well, I've investigated carefully, and I think the central market stock would be the best bet.
That stock is selling for $100 a share.
Yes, and it's bound to go up. I'll take 30 shares.
I congratulate you, Mr. Vanderlip. I believe you've made a very wise investment.
Vanderlip's first investment was his worst, for within a few months, The Central Market Company went into bankruptcy and the entire family fortune was gone. But Vanderlip was no longer a timid country boy, and furthermore, his prestige as financial editor was at stake. So, at a meeting of the company's creditors...
Gentlemen, since the Central Market Company is insolvent, we must attempt some method of reorganization.
Mr. Gaines, I have a word to say first.
But, Mr. Vanderlip, this is rather irregular.
Yes, the Central Market Company was rather irregular also.
I've done some more investigating, gentlemen, and I found that I was the only person who paid any money for this stock. The rest of you men obtained the stock free.
What, sir?
Yes, and I can prove it. There's also a law in Illinois which says that stock has to be paid for in full. Now, before you gentlemen decide to reorganize, you'll have to pay me in full for my shares of the stock.
Why, that's preposterous. Well, it can't possibly be done.
Gentlemen,
you can discuss it as long as you want, but in the end, I'm going to get my money.
Mr. Vanderlip, you are quite right. The money's coming to you, and I personally will see that you get it.
From that time on, Vanderlip and Gage became good friends. Upon the inauguration of President McKinley, Gage was appointed Secretary of the Treasury, and Vanderlip went to Washington with him as Assistant Secretary. Then, upon the nation's entry into the Spanish-American War, Vanderlip was given supervision of a $200 million bond issue. It is a hot afternoon in July, the last day for public subscription to the bonds. Vanderlip and Gage stand anxiously by a window overlooking Pennsylvania Avenue.
What time is it, Gage?
3 o'clock.
Well, that wagon is supposed to be here by this time.
I'm not worried, are you?
No, but that wagon is carrying the last load of subscriptions. Supposing we don't meet our quota. America needs every bit of that $200 million to win this war.
There's a whole carload of subscriptions that the clerks haven't checked on yet. We'll get our quota.
Well, here comes the wagon. I see it now. It's coming down the avenue at a gallop.
Hey, something must have happened. Look at that mob of people. They're pouring out of the houses.
Get Charlie on the phone. Find out what's wrong.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's him now.
Hello? 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 That's you, Charlie?
Good Lord. Everybody in Washington.
Charlie, I can't hear a word you're saying.
What's that?
Mr. Vanderlip, have you heard the news? We've won in Cuba. The Americans have taken Sandy out.
Oh, thank heaven. James, did you hear what I heard?
I got it this time, Charlie. Thanks.
Santiago is false.
Yes, and that isn't all. We've got more money than we can use. The bond issue has brought in over $1 billion. We've won both ways, Vanderlip. But the credit for this last victory belongs to you.
Vanderlip's success with the government bond issue brought him fame throughout American financial circles. Hearing of his ability, conservative James Stillman, head of the National City Bank in New York, offered him the position of vice president. Vanderlip accepted, but other bank officials looked askance at the young newcomer.
I would not attempt to tell you how to run the bank, Mr. Stillman, but as a director, I feel there are some things you should know.
Yes, Mr. Peters.
It's about this young Vanderlip. Since he's been here, he has instituted a very peculiar practice. I refer to his soliciting of accounts. He's been writing letters to prominent businessmen asking for their accounts.
Yes, I know about that.
Until he came here, this bank has never solicited an account. I regard it as extremely unorthodox.
Well, perhaps so. But he's brought in a lot of money.
This is another matter, too. He has recently written some magazine articles.
Yes, I agree with you on that point. It's not good business for a banker to write for magazines. I'll speak to him about it later. The Vidcon Shibasawa has just arrived from Japan, and Vanderlip and I are going to his hotel this afternoon.
The Vidcon Shibasawa? Isn't he known as the Morgan of Japan?
Yes, very influential. I want him to come to dinner at my house. It's possible that we might come to a business agreement. But I'm afraid he won't come. You see, the Vidcon is a sort of a man.
I regard this meeting as a most happy coincidence. Most happy. Be seated, gentlemen.
Thank you. We've heard a great deal about you, Vicomte. Mr. Vanderlip and I...
Mr. Vanderlip? Oh, yes. While I was in Europe, I had the good fortune to read one of your articles.
Oh, I've written several of them.
This was regarding commercial invasion of Europe. Very interesting. I have had it translated into Japanese. See, it is painted on this scroll.
Well, I'll send you the others if you wish.
I shall look forward to reading them. But better yet, we might have a talk sometime.
I'm giving a dinner next Saturday, Vicomte, if you could consent to attend.
Ah, I should be delighted. Mr. Vanderlip will be there, of course.
Of course.
Ah, good, good. Then I shall see you both next Saturday. And I am sure we shall come to some agreement on your proposition.
Good day, sir.
I'll expect you at 8.
At 8. Good day.
The elevator's this way.
Yes. Well, Vanderlip, it looks as though we've accomplished our purpose. I've been meaning to say something about those magazine articles of yours.
Well, you don't object to them.
Oh, no. I was thinking that they might be good publicity for the bank if we could print them privately.
Oh, an excellent idea. I've always thought that there shouldn't be so much secrecy about banking. If you run everything on the square and give the public confidence in you, you're bound to come out ahead.
I'm very proud of you, Vanderlip. You're my protege. And someday, very soon, you will be president of the greatest bank in America.
Wow.
That's what I had in mind when I hired you.
Going up?
Hmm?
Oh. No, I've already gone up a long way.
True to his word, James Stillman retired, and Frank Vanderlip took over the helm of the National City Bank, spreading its branches to every corner of the world. In 1918, he resigned, devoting a great part of his time to furthering public education. On June 29th, 1937, he died at the age of 72, a man who rose from obscurity to fame through his own efforts. Frank A. Vanderlip, Captain of Industry.